welcome back to the end of the road. We were up at Kirsten and Stormy's place. They're having a housewarming. Everybody's bringing a lot of nice things. And Doug showed up. Doug McDougan showed up with something he found at the dump. When he walked in the room, a gasp sort of escaped from everybody. But it was only Sissy Tuttle who said it out loud. "That lamp!" She put a hand over her mouth as if to catch the color that was draining from her cheeks. And Doug felt compelled to explain himself. "Found it at the dump." He said it as if boasting of a bargain at JCPenney. And without another word, he scuffed over to the food table, leaving that lamp to fend for itself and find its way into the lives of the assemblage. Well, little did Doug know that his lucky find had already been through the lives of nearly everybody present. Passed from one to the other like a bad cold. His retarded sensitivities wouldn't allow him to notice the round robin of shame and resentment that was commencing before he got the first deviled egg to his mouth. Everyone's eyes were on Sissy Tuttle, who'd been the first one to make the mistake of recognizing this hideous excuse for a lighting implement. "I threw it out yesterday." She looked around white-faced and stammered on like an accused murderer with a knife in her hand. "It wasn't mine, you know. It was left over from the charity bazaar. No one would buy it." She stopped talking and thought of the Organization of Fishermen's Wives charity bazaar and flea market last Saturday. Not only would nobody buy the lamp, nobody would even come near it. Whatever piece of furniture or clothing it stood close to seemed immediately threadbare and overpriced, and it was bogging down the entire benefit. A lot of people just stuck their heads in the door, got one glimpse of the lamp, and promptly left with a false impression of the whole inventory. Chapter President Donna Fitzwillie had asked her in front of the other women to put it back in her car, and she still hadn't completely unfolded from the cringe of embarrassment. She'd risked her entire reputation as a conscientious homemaker by accepting the donation of the lamp in the first place. In a defensive reflex, she dodged. "Well, Bud Koenig gave it to us." Sissy eased into the cushions of the couch, feeling spared, while Bud bristled across the room. It was true. He'd donated it to the charity bazaar because he couldn't stand having it around his store. Somebody had left it on the front step of Bud's saw and chain shop one morning, so he'd taken it in. Most of Bud's furniture, at home and in his shop, had been carved out of big hunks of wood with chainsaw, so he didn't have as keen an eye as some for interior decorating. Even so, it only took a few days for Bud to recognize that this lamp and its dangly personality was too unsightly even for a saw shop. Being of a generation raised not to waste, Bud couldn't make himself throw it away, so he called Sissy Tuttle under the pretense of philanthropy and gave it to her. He felt bad about it when Sissy showed up to get it. Real bad. Like he'd given a dog a boot to eat because he didn't have any meat. Without saying anything in his own defense, Bud looked to the only person in the room he knew that would wish such a dilemma on him. "What, I'll wait just a minute." Argus raised a hand to hold back the judgment of the room. "I'm a junk dealer. I get all manner of things come through my junkyard. I could see that fruity lamp had no resale value, so I left it off figuring you could use it. Seemed a little dim in your shop last time I was in." Nobody believed a word he said. And Argus himself knew full well he'd left it at Bud's store just to annoy him. So he did the only decent thing. He passed the buck. "Well, Tamara Dupree brought it by, and I gave her $1 for it, figuring she must have been desperate." "I beg your pardon." Tamara started to bluster a rationalization, but realized before she started that she hadn't one. She had been desperate. The Flanagans had given her the lamp one day, figuring it would be appreciated by two eclectic and creative minds such as hers and Tony's, and they'd let the flattery blind them. Tamara figured the lamp would make a wonderful conversation piece, but it proved itself to be too ugly to talk about. It cast a sort of mildew green light in their cabin, a lifeless light, a light like a dentist lamp makes. It irritated the eyes, sort of foreshadowed pain. It had to go. Seeing the lamp again filled her with such revulsion, she felt insulted by its presence and the idea that anyone would possibly think she could like such an atrocity. She stared daggers at Ed, and he took one in the heart. Well, hell's bells, it was giving my kids nightmares. What was I supposed to do? Kirsten and Stormy gave it to us, and couldn't hand it over to just anybody. It was a flimsy justification, and Ed knew it, but at least it put the heat back where it belonged, which was firmly on the original and present owners of the awful, unwanted item that had passed from one end of town to the other and back under the guise of generosity. The doorbell rang just as Kirsten was finding her voice to explain the whole thing and finger the real culprits. When she opened the door, a small sound escaped from her throat. She couldn't have been more unnerved if she'd looked out and saw the Messiah riding a buffalo across the yard. There in her doorway, beaming like picnic missionaries, were the culprits, Pastor Frank and Fanny Olmsted, holding something between them that sent Kirsten three steps back into the room. Could only be described as a nightmare with a plug on it. A recurring nightmare. From the bottom of its seamy base to the top of its anemic green shade with dangling foolery and crippled posture, it was the dead ringer twin lamp of the one inside. And every bit is welcome. Yucko! Everybody in the room silently agreed with Doug's sentiment before they looked over and saw he'd been referring to a taste of avocado nut roll Tamara and Tony had brought and was oblivious to the pastor and Fanny's arrival. Fanny bustled in and set their offering down next to its mate. Then she stepped back to the pastor and cocked her perky little head toward Kirsten and Stormy. "We just knew you'd be surprised. When we gave you the first one last summer, we didn't want to tell you there were two. We wanted you to fall in love with it so you'd be just that much more thrilled when you found out there was another one. Don't you just love them?" Well, a fly could have made its way safely in and out of the mouths of everybody present. They all gaped in astonishment, not just at the dynamic duo of ugly before them, but at the idea that somebody could actually stand them. Kirsten looked into the pleased faces of her benefactors, and the truth of the whole matter came clear to her. Fanny and the pastor really did like these lamps. They liked them a lot, so much that Kirsten could see a glimmer of sadness in their eyes, sort of a sadness of parting. They were giving something away that they wanted for themselves so badly that they could hardly hide it. Kirsten suddenly realized that it was probably one of the sincerest acts of giving she'd experienced over this past difficult year, and certainly the sincerest one she'd heard about all evening. She looked around at the faces circling the room, trying to conceal their distaste, and Kirsten felt a little ashamed for all of them. And she looked over at Doug McDougan, feeding his face at the table, and silently gave thanks he'd brought the lamp back to them. She also made a mental note to tell Doug at her earliest possible convenience that she'd kill him in his sleep if he ever mentions where he found it. Kirsten looked back to Pastor Frank and Fanny and resumed her air of true and total delight with the world. They are special, Fanny. Very unique. They must be a family heirloom. I don't know how you can part with them. She took a long look at the lamps again. Believe me, I have a hard time accepting them from you. Pastor Frank, somewhat flushed and impressed with his own selfless deed, put a reassuring hand on Kirsten's shoulder. Now, now, my dear, there's no need for concern. These lamps mean the world to Fanny and I, and that's why we want your family to have them. As the Bible teaches us in the book of Acts, it is certainly more blessed to give than to receive. Everyone in the room took a good long look at the two lamps, and there wasn't anybody who was going to disagree with that. Well, it goes to show that it's not just the gift, but the thought that counts. And don't you just wonder what people were thinking about when they brought you some of those goofy gifts you've gotten. We're going to find out about that when we take some calls on Road Talk with Charlie Boone and Roger Erickson coming up next. We'll be right back.
Did it again. Great story. A while back, some of you might have heard on WCCO, we had a little talent search to find out who would be the musical guests on the show. And in our offices in Homer, we were sent 138 tapes from this entire area, all of them coming from Minnesota. And I'll tell you one thing, that's more than we've gotten in a year and a half in the whole state of Alaska. But we listened to every single one of them, finding the right choice for the story, for the theme of the show. And we've got a guest tomorrow. Pat Donahue will be here. And tonight we have a very special song coming up at the end of the program from this guy. But right now he's going to play something else for you of his choice. I'd like to introduce Douglas Wood.
Yes, I'm Doug. You heard about me already, I guess. Well, Boone and Erickson are going to be out here in a couple of minutes, and I've been on the show with them a couple times over at CCO, and I'm going to play for you Roger's favorite song in the world. At least he has told me that it is. This is a song about outhouses. It's called The Outhouse Blues. I'll tell you about a special place I know, a spot that everybody likes to go. It's got a special atmosphere that folks are looking for, 'cause they always crack a smile when they walk inside that door. It's a place where you can go to get away. Some folks even seem to want to stay. You can't buy no liquor there, no burgers and no fries, but sit down on the throne and hey, you're Lord of the Flies. It's a place where you can go to hide and sulk if you've had too many beans or malted mulks. And lately I've been here a little more than I would choose. I got them outhouse blues. Well, there's a special fragrance lingering in the air. It's something you don't find just anywhere. You can tell which way the wind blows when you're out there in the woods. And sitting down inside, you learn to hold your breath real good. Now some folks like to sit and socialize, even though the tears are streaming from their eyes. There's one and two and three holders, and I once saw four. But the folks who used to hang out there don't come back anymore. Well, I guess they found some other place to meet, where they drink Perrier and wash each other's feet. But I don't like them hot tubs, I'll just sit here with my muse. I got them outhouse blues, yeah. Well, I know that there's been progress through the years, new ways of handling matters in arrears. Come on, folks, that's the best line in the whole song. Walked around back and forth for an hour trying to come up. I'm going to give you another chance at that one, okay? Now, I know that there's been progress through the years. New ways of handling matters in arrears. I love spontaneous approval. Now, what's the next line? Let's see. Blah, blah. Ah, yes, but stainless steel and porcelain somehow never feel as good. I miss the gentle, soothing touch of cracked and splintered wood. I think it's time that we got back to basic things. Out where breezes blow and telephones don't ring. And just sitting down and smiling as we live the life we choose. I got them outhouse, I'll take them outhouse. Give me them outhouse.
All right, good.
Thank you. I'll see you later. Thank you.